Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good evening and welcome to Cure Talks. I'm Shweta Mishra, your host, joining you from India. And today, on this episode of Cure Talks, we are going to learn about effective mind-body strategies to reduce the stress of infertility and improve mental health. Research has shown that our mental state affects the outcome of treatment in all disease conditions, including infertility, where it may decrease the chances of conception. Couples dealing with infertility go through immense stress, oftentimes severe depression, because the follow-up and treatment of infertility itself may cause anxiety and depression. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and we are talking to practicing psychologist Dr. Alice Domer, a pioneer in the field of mind-body medicine, director of integrative care at Boston IVF, associate professor of reproductive biology at Harvard Medical School, and executive director of Domer Centers for Mind-Body Health. Dr. Domer conducts ongoing groundbreaking research which focuses on relationship between stress and fertility, the impact of cognitive behavioral interventions, as well as the impact of lifestyle habits on mental and physical health. She's been a keynote speaker and workshop leader at conferences worldwide. Past chair of Mental Health Professional Group of American Society of Reproductive Medicine, Dr. Domer is on the board of Parents Magazine and served 10 years on the board of Resolve, the National Infertility Association. She's also the author of several books and co-creator of apps FertiCalm and FertiStrong. In this talk, Dr. Domer will highlight effective mind-body strategies to reduce stress, decrease physical, psychological symptoms of infertility in men and women, and develop a positive mental state that may help increase the chances of conception. I welcome you to Cure Talks, Dr. Domer.
Thank you very much.
I extend a warm welcome to all our listeners, and our listeners can follow Dr. Domer's presentation slides on the link that has been provided on curetalks.com. And I would like to remind our listeners that we will be discussing questions sent in via email at the end of the show, so you can email your questions to shweta@trialx.com. And if you want to ask a question live, please press 1 on your keypad and we'll bring you on air to ask them. Or you can also post your questions directly on Cure Talks website as you listen to the talk. So Dr. Domer, let's begin. So some or the other kind of stress is all around us at almost all times in our life, Dr. Domer, and everyone has to deal with it. But based on research, what we also know is that our bodies have inbuilt mechanisms to deal with these stress. And it's just that most of us are not aware of how to kind of, you know, switch these mechanisms or processes on in our bodies when needed. And personally, I'm a very firm believer of the fact that being in the positive frame of mind works wonders on human body. And I've experienced it actually firsthand in my infertility journey. So it will be great, Dr. Domer, if you could begin by explaining how stress impacts fertility and how psychological interventions like your mind-body programs can help people achieve success in their family-building goals. And our listeners can follow the slides on our website, curetalks.com, and I'm sure they're all eager to learn about some effective techniques to reduce stress.
That sounds great. Thanks, Shweta. I really appreciate it. So if those of you who can see the slides, I would just go to the fourth slide in the deck, and I'll start from there. It's entitled The Stress of Infertility. And, you know, I think this may come as a huge shock to people, but we published a paper about 20 years ago showing that women with infertility reported the same level of distress as did women with metastatic cancer, heart disease, or HIV-positive status. And, you know, when we published that paper, it wasn't a surprise to me because I was seeing patients with all different kinds of disease states, and I had already observed that infertility patients report a lot of distress. But many women going through infertility report it is the most difficult time of their lives. And a groundbreaking study came out, I think, in 2004. Until 2004, most researchers, including me, had assessed, you know, measured distress by basically handing women a questionnaire to say, how distressed are you? And that drastically underreported how much stress women were under, because a lot of women didn't want to actually admit to how distressed they were because they were afraid that their doctor would refuse to let them have treatment because they thought they wouldn't be able to handle it. And this particular study used a psychiatric interview, and so they looked at women who are coming in for their very first clinic visit to see an infertility doctor. And almost half of the women, I think it was 40-something percent, reported psychiatric levels of anxiety, depression, or both. And this was not that women are crazy. Most of these women had no mental health history before infertility. They were simply normal, healthy women of reproductive age who had been trying to get pregnant for a year or two or more. And by that time they saw an infertility specialist, they were feeling very defeated and very anxious and very lonely. And a study came out, I think about 2 years ago, out of University of California, San Francisco, by a psychologist there named Lori Pash. And she surveyed several hundred women and men who were coming in for infertility treatment. And they found that the majority of women were anxious, depressed, or both. It's just very, very hard to go through infertility. Next slide, please. So, you know, a layperson might say, and this is, I do see mothers-in-law, and I see partners, and I see family members, because I very much understand why my patients are feeling that this is so hard for them, because infertility really does impact every aspect of a woman's life, of an individual's life. And I'm really talking about women because I tend to see mostly female patients. And it affects her relationship with her partner because in a heterosexual relationship, I can tell you this, men and women do not respond to infertility in the same way at the same time. In general, in my opinion, women tend to sort of be a year or tend to be ahead of their partner in that, you know, they fall in love sooner and they want to get married sooner and they want to start trying sooner and they think there's a problem sooner and they want to see a doctor sooner and they want to see a specialist sooner and they want to move on to high-tech treatment sooner. And so when you sit down with a couple, the wife will usually say, he's holding me back, and the husband will usually say, she's pushing me to make decisions I don't feel ready to make. And so that causes some friction because for a lot of people, infertility is the first crisis of their relationship. And it can be hard to be in a crisis with someone you love who's not responding in the same way or at the same time. And on top of that, women with infertility often feel almost phobic about being around pregnant women, or they live in fear of pregnancy announcements. And so, you know, they're afraid to go to social functions if they suspect there'll be a pregnancy announcement, or they don't want to go home for a holiday if their sister is pregnant. And men don't tend to feel the same way. Men seem to feel pretty immune to pregnancy announcements and to pregnancy, and so that can cause friction between the couple because she may want to avoid events where there might be a pregnant woman, and he may not want to avoid those events. So it affects their relationship. It also affects their sex life because they're often told when they should and should not be making love. People start to associate sex with failure. And a lot of people, once they move on to more high-tech treatment, just say, well, why should we bother having sex because it doesn't work anyway. It impacts their relationship with their family. In all likelihood, their siblings are getting pregnant, and so their parents are probably talking a lot about their grandchildren. And so a lot of my patients don't want to go home for family functions because they don't want to see their siblings, you know, with their children. They don't want to see their parents being happy grandparents. And so they start to isolate themselves. And the same thing with their friends. You know, all their friends are getting pregnant, and when people get pregnant and have babies, that's all they talk about. And so you'll see this couple in crisis who start to pull away from family and friends, and so they don't have social support. It can impact their job or career because, you know, many jobs these days involve travel, and you can't travel when you're undergoing treatment. A lot of women are in jobs that involve children. They might have, you know, chosen to become a teacher or a nanny or a pediatrician, thinking that would be flexible with their own children. I've had patients who are obstetricians and nurse midwives and labor and delivery room nurses, and so all they do all day is hear pregnant women complain, and they can't get away from it. Infertility can also affect an individual or couple's financial stability because In the United States, I think there are only 7 states that include IVF coverage. And so there often are, there's friction between the couple about what should they pay for and not pay for. So it can affect their financial stability. And finally, it can affect their relationship with God. We've done research on this, and for a lot of people, they feel like this is the first time God has not answered their prayers. And they feel like they're good people, they would be amazing parents, and they see so many children out there in the world who are not appreciated by their parents, and they can't understand why God won't give them a baby. So if you look at it, infertility impacts every aspect of their life. And on top of it, the average person going through infertility hears from everyone, oh, just relax and you'll get pregnant. Or, you know, you're working at it too hard. Or go on vacation. Or just adopt. And the central theme behind all of that is, you know, it's your fault. You're too tense to get pregnant. You're too stressed out to get pregnant, which means they're blaming the victim. And you would never say to a cancer patient, oh, just relax and your cancer will go away. No one would ever do that. So
exactly.
it adds to the burden. So let's move on to slide 6. So I think it's pretty clear that infertility causes very high levels of stress in most people, but the question then comes in, does stress cause infertility? It's controversial. It's hard to assess. It's hard to do really good research. We know that women who have a history of depression are more likely to have infertility. There's a director of reproductive epidemiology at Ohio State who has shown that the more stressed a woman is, the longer it takes her to get pregnant and the more likely she will experience infertility. What we don't really know is whether or not stress during treatment impacts treatment outcome. It's very hard to assess that because people tend to get optimistic before they start a treatment cycle and or women know their prognosis. And so, you know, a 44-year-old with a high FSH level is probably going to be more anxious before a cycle than a 25-year-old whose FSH is, you know, 2. And so it's very hard to tease out those two things. So, you know, do I personally believe that, yes, stress impacts treatment outcome? Yes, I do believe that, and that's mostly because if you look at the intervention research, it looks pretty clear. So moving on to slide 7, you know, before we even look at the impact of stress on treatment outcome, nobody likes feeling stressed. It's unpleasant to be depressed. It's really unpleasant to be anxious. So it's just not good to feel stressed. We also know that people who are stressed are much more likely to drop out of treatment, even when people with insurance. And people who drop out of treatment because of their distress level are often faced with regret later in life. And so I don't want to ever see somebody drop out of treatment because they're too stressed to continue if we know that there are ways that we can pretty easily decrease their stress level. So let's look at slide 8. You know, so what can you do? Like, what can you do to decrease your stress level? And, you know, I have to say, I think there have probably been 35 or 40, you know, randomized controlled studies looking at different psychological interventions. And there's a thing called a meta-analysis where they sort of pool all the studies. And the most recent one showed that women who are going through infertility who do some kind of psychological intervention are far more likely to get pregnant, and they experience much lower levels of distress. And that was a very good study. It was out of Scandinavia. I can't remember the country, but it was out of Scandinavia, and they had very solid results. And the intervention form that they felt was the most effective is called cognitive behavior therapy. And cognitive behavior therapy involves teaching people how to challenge automatic negative thought patterns. It's a very proactive kind of therapy. And the meta-analyses before that have shown that interventions that are at least successions are more effective than shorter ones, and they've also shown that interventions that provide skills. So not just sitting around talking about how hard infertility is, but teaching women skills which they can use to help themselves feel better are more effective. So I started a program, next slide, slide 9. I started a program in 1987 called the Mind-Body Program for Infertility. It's a 10-session group treatment program for women at any stage of treatment. It includes cognitive behavior therapy. It includes relaxation training. We talk about lifestyle habits. We talk about the safety and efficacy of alternative approaches like acupuncture. And there's a lot of group support. Like, women can walk into this group and say, my younger sister is pregnant for the third time, and everyone in the group will go, oh, my God, we're so sorry, which is exactly what she needs to hear. And we also have peer counselors who are graduates of the program who are really there as role models, and we have buddy systems, so everybody gets a buddy in the group. So slide 10, every session has like an optional first half hour is like a mini support group. People get a chance to tell their stories. We do a different relaxation exercise each week, and there's like a topic each week. And that could be self-nurturance. It could be countering automatic negative thought patterns, like I'll never have a baby. And we talk about how to cope with anger, shame, and isolation. Next slide. So we've done two large randomized controlled studies looking at the impact of the MindBody program. In the first one, we looked at the take-home baby rate, and we found that women who did the MindBody program had a 55% take-home baby rate compared to 20% in the controls. And the controls are women who didn't do any group. And the MindBody patients also had significant decreases in anxiety and depression. And then we followed up a few years ago with a study just on IVF patients. And we found that when women did a MindBody program, they had a 52% pregnancy rate compared again to a 20% pregnancy rate in the control group. So that's pretty solid evidence that doing a MindBody form of intervention does seem to increase pregnancy rates and decreases distress.
Mm-hmm,
so,
absolutely.
Moving on to slide. Sorry, I'm sorry. Did you have a question?
No, no. Yeah, I'm just said yeah. That is actually a solid evidence that you just 55% versus 20% you mentioned is actually a great evidence, right?
Well, I was pretty happy when we did the data analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've sort of, you know, this has been my whole career, so I was pretty happy.
Sure.
So when we look at the data of women who aren't doing research with us but are just, you know, patients in our MindBody program, we have found that about a little over half get pregnant within 6 months. We've also shown that most of the women who come into the program have some kind of physical symptom, like insomnia or headaches or back pain or shortness of breath, and we found that they have about a 67% reduction in those symptoms. And we've also, a while ago, followed women for 2 years and found that 95% within 2 years became moms in one way or another. So there was some long-term happiness there. And then we recently did, I had a graduate student whose dissertation was converting the in-person MindBody program into an online program. And her preliminary results, which she presented last year at the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, show that the women who did the online program, again, had significantly higher pregnancy rates and really nice decreases in negative psychological symptoms in the control group. So, you know, that's an innovative way of doing it online. So moving on to slide 14, we also did another randomized controlled study a couple years ago. I think we published it about 2 or 3 years ago, where we actually just mailed women a packet of information on how to do some cognitive therapy, and we included some relaxation exercises. And in that study, we did not see a difference in pregnancy rate, but we did see really lovely decreases in distress. And the women who got the stress management packet were 67% less likely to drop out of treatment. And, in fact, the goal of that study had actually been to look at the impact on treatment termination. So moving on, you know, I might be old, but I have to sort of keep up with technology. And about a year ago, my colleague, Dr. Elizabeth Grill, who's a psychologist, who's the chief psychologist at Cornell Medical Center in New York, she and I wrote and created a new app called Ferticom. And the idea of Ferticom is, you know, she and I think between the two of us, we've been seeing patients for over 45 years. And so we know what's hard for our patients. And so we came up with the 50 situations which are the most likely to cause distress, like your little sister announcing she's pregnant at a family function, or being at work and getting your period, or sitting in the clinic waiting to be called in. And we came up with cognitive behavioral and relaxation strategies for each of those situations. So the way the app works is, I think on the next slide it sort of shows it. It doesn't really show it here. So let's say you're at work and you get your period, you go in the bathroom, you open the app, and you can actually find that exact scenario, and you push that petal, it's a flower, and there are cognitive solutions, there are behavioral solutions. I think my favorite is called social solutions, and it's comeback lines for people who say stupid things. So basically it gives you scripts on what to say. And the app has been licensed by Ferring Pharmaceuticals, so it's actually free to download. I do not get paid per download, so I feel very comfortable talking about the app. So if anybody,
okay.
if anybody in the U.S. or Canada wants to download the app, they just can go to their Apple or Android store. In the U.S., it's also available in Spanish, and in Canada, it's available in French-Canadian. And they can just use the app as they see fit. You know, it's we don't collect personal data. Everything's anonymous, I promise you. It's really nice for me because on weekends and evenings when my patients are in crisis, they say that having the app makes them feel like I'm sitting in their phone. And so no matter what situation they're in, they can find something on the phone. It also includes 10 guided relaxations in my voice. So I had a patient the other day who was flying, and she got really anxious, and she listened to the relaxation. She felt better. And we just 2 weeks ago, moving on to slide 17, released a new app because I think the only criticism we got for Ferticom was that it was for women. I mean, it's very clearly for women. It's very pretty. It's pastels. It's a flower. And it's very much directed for women. And 2 weeks ago, we released a new app called Ferta Strong, and it's basically the male equivalent. And so, again, you know, Ferring licensed it, so it's free to download anywhere in the U.S. Right now it's only available in English, but we're working on that. And the idea is these are for men, either for men with infertility or men whose partner has infertility. And it was written by two psychologists who have an expertise in men going through infertility. And I'd say half of it is mind, body, and relaxation skills for the guys, and half of it is what they can do when their wife is upset. So it's both. Mm-hmm. And we, as I said, we just launched that. So I'm back on slide 18. I'm wrapping up. So just to conclude, you know, we know that women with infertility experience, you know, really significant levels of distress. We know that distress is really unpleasant and may or may not impact pregnancy rates. But we do know that psychological interventions are associated with lower levels of distress and higher pregnancy rates. And we are working to create new and innovative ways to address these issues through cognitive behavior therapy and relaxation strategies that can be available on your phone. So that is my slide deck.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Dr. Domer, for your for a very, very comprehensive presentation. And thank you for sharing some great optimistic results from research studies which support these behavioral and cognitive behavioral therapy and the psychological interventions. So I'm just wondering, Dr. Domer, the mind-body program on which the Ferticom and Fertistrong apps are based is ongoing from 1987, like your slide
mm-hmm.
shows.
I was three when I started it.
Oh, wow. And,
I'm joking.
That's
I'm old.
Great.
It's okay. I was not
yeah,
that precocious.
Right. Of course. So I'm just wondering, yeah, the efficacy of this program has already been, you know, proven by these randomized controlled studies, right? So I'm just curious, are the doctors writing things like, you know, practice meditation or yoga or any other mind-body techniques for 15 minutes daily on their prescription for patients? And are these apps prescribed to patients? Or if not, then how far are we? When the physicians will be prescribing these apps to the patients?
Well, it would be my dream for physicians to prescribe meditation or a mind-body group or an app to a patient. I think there are some physicians who are very in tune with their patients' emotional health. And, in fact, I was giving a talk at the American Society of Reproductive Medicine meeting, and I was talking about psychological interventions, and I don't really feel all that comfortable talking about the apps because they're mine and I don't want to self-promote, and so I wasn't talking about the apps. And in the middle of my talk, this physician stood up which is just not done at these meetings. And she said, I have to stop you. She says, I think you're being irresponsible, not to mention Furtacom. And I'm like, well, mm-hmm. And she said, have you ever heard of it? And I said, I co-wrote mm-hmm. it. And then she tells the audience that, you know, she's mm-hmm. a physician, she's an REI, and she, a reproductive endocrinologist, and she said that she has this new routine that whenever she has to do a procedure on a patient that might be painful or unpleasant, she walks into mm-hmm. the exam room, she greets the patient, she tells the patient to download the app, and asks them to do one of the relaxations on the app, mm-hmm. and then she says, I'll be back in 15 minutes. And she said it's really changed how she delivers her care. So I thought that was an amazing story. I don't know how many physicians in the country are recommending the app to their patients. I obviously wish mm-hmm. more would, because the feedback we've gotten from patients has been really nice. As I said, they really feel like there's a psychologist in their pocket. And no matter mm-hmm. what's going on in their lives, there is some proactive solution in the app.
Exactly.
They don't feel alone.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So in one of your interviews, I heard that you said that if mind-body techniques were a pill, every patient would take it. And I believe that is so true. So can you shed some light on, why is it so hard for people to get into the habit of inculcating these stress-dissolving techniques into everyday life?
Well, I think there are a number of barriers. I mean, if there had been medication that led to the increases in pregnancy rates and the decreases in distress, if someone came up with a pill or even an injection that created mm-hmm. those positive changes, every infertility patient in the world would be taking that pill. And especially if it was relatively cheap and had no side effects. And so it's frustrating mm-hmm. for me that I've spent, 31 years of my career
mm-hmm. yeah.
trying to convince people, especially women, and now physicians, that women need to be proactive. There are things that they can do to help themselves feel better. They just, need to take it. They need to take the time. And again, people, if there was a pill, they'd be doing it. It's just doing mind-body strategies takes time. Doing a mind-body group takes a time commitment. It's so interesting to me when I read the evaluations after women finish the program, and almost everybody says, this is the best thing I've ever done. I finally feel the way I did before infertility, like I'm myself again. And I do tell people that for me the goal of the Mind-Body program is not pregnancy, but the goal mm-hmm. is to get their lives back, to be the person
Correct.
They were
Right.
before infertility.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Believe me, I've been there and done that, so totally believe on that. So, I have one question on the denial issue. So, people often discount the fact that mental health actually directly affects physical health, and mental issues like depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder, people mostly think of it as their nature, right, or anybody else's nature, and hence the denial problem. So how do you help such people in the state of denial? Many a times they might not be in a mood to go to a counselor.
Well, it's almost like a catch-22, because when someone is feeling depressed, they feel hopeless. And so when you're feeling hopeless, it's very hard to be proactive. And in fact, the vast majority of people in the world who are depressed, anxious, bipolar, never see a mental health professional. There's a sense of shame. There's a sense of embarrassment. There's a sense of hopelessness that anyone can ever help you. And yet if you look at the research on the efficacy of all kinds of different interventions, for infertility patients and others, there are lots of things that are highly effective. If you look at the data, I am not a big believer in taking medication for depression when someone's trying to get pregnant, unless somebody has a really significant history. But if you look at the data on the efficacy for just depression of cognitive behavior therapy or exercise or acupuncture, these have efficacy rates of well over 50%, about the same as the efficacy of medication. And so I don't think people should feel hopeless or helpless. I have seen people who were just unbelievably depressed, come either see me individually or more likely do the Mind-Body program, and within a month, mm-hmm. their depression really significantly lifts.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I would like to know, and I'm sure the listeners would like to know, that what is one thing, a tip or an advice that you tell your patients with infertility-related depression and anxiety that you have seen works in changing their frame of mind?
You know, everyone always asks me what the active ingredient is of the MindBody program.
Yeah.
Because it's cognitive behavior therapy, and it's relaxation strategies, and it's, you know, learning to express your emotions, and it's adopting healthier lifestyle behaviors, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. pursuing good alternative strategies and not pursuing bad ones. And then there's group support, you know, that's really powerful. And so people say, well, you know, what's the active ingredient? And I'm like, I don't care. It works. Why mess with it? And I think probably mm-hmm. the answer is different things work for different people. And I've had mm-hmm. some people go, wow, that group support, that's exactly what I needed. I've had other people say, oh, it was the relaxation techniques. Like, those are so valuable. But other people say it was the cognitive strategies. I mean, they learn to think in a far less mm-hmm. negative way. Some people say, you know, we have the partners come to 3 of the 10 sessions. And some people say mm-hmm. it was just my partner really learning about what I was going through, and now he really supports and respects me. So I don't think we can say what works. I mean, the fact that the online program looks like it's pretty darn effective would actually suggest that the active ingredient is probably not social support. So there's probably mm-hmm. something to the cognitive strategies, the lifestyle changes, and the relaxation practice.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for your answer, Dr. Domer. And one last question from my end, and then we'll move on to the audience question. So could you please talk a bit about latest research going on in this field of mind-body techniques?
It's a source of endless frustration for me that there aren't more people, mm-hmm. certainly in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Europe tends to be ahead of us in terms of psychosocial research and mm-hmm. infertility. And, you know, the European group is called ESHRI, and they tend to have much better research and publications than we do in the U.S., although mm-hmm. I think for both organizations, I can tell you this, doing randomized controlled research trials is really tough. I mean, in my 30 years of practice, I've done three. I'm doing another small one now. It takes an enormous amount of money. It takes a huge amount of time. And it's really hard to recruit women with infertility to be in a randomized controlled trial because, by definition, it pretty much means half of them will get the intervention and the other half won't. And mm-hmm. it's very hard to take people who are really distressed and say, hey, thanks for volunteering. You know, we'll see you in 3 months. You know, that just doesn't feel really good. I think we probably need to do a little bit more research. But, you know, with that meta-analysis that came out a year or two ago, which, you know, summarized, you know, 35 studies, I'm mm-hmm. not sure how much more research we need to do that documents that women with infertility benefit enormously from psychological interventions. I think that's sort of like a given now. Like, doing some kind of psychological intervention is going to help you. It's going to help you feel better psychologically, and it's likely to increase your chances of getting pregnant. I think mm-hmm. what we probably need to focus on now is what's the most effective mode of delivery. Like, if somebody lives far away from a mind-body group, it's not practical for her to do a mind-body mm-hmm. group, and we get that. So I think right now, the mind-body program looks like it's showing some of the best results, but it's not practical for some people. We don't have mm-hmm. data on the apps, and we're not going to ever get data probably on Ferticom because it's, mm-hmm. it's out already. So, unfortunately, you know, we launched it before we had the time or the money to do a study on it. We based it on previous mm-hmm. research that had shown a huge impact.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, yeah. Thank you for answering all my questions, Dr. Domer, and I'm just now moving on to submitted questions that have been put on our website. So we have a question from Claire, and she says, many aches and pains are rooted in brain processes that can be affected by your mental attitude and emotions. What do you think is the best way to tackle this?
Well, Claire's entirely right. I mean, there's no barrier between the mind and the body. And as I mentioned earlier, when we look at our mind-body patients, infertility mind-body patients, almost all of them come in with headaches, neck pain, back pain, insomnia, abdominal pain, fatigue. Most of them don't feel great, and that's most likely a manifestation of the stress that they're experiencing. And so when we're really stressed out, our body tells us. It tells us by not allowing us to sleep well or by, you know, giving us headaches or shortness of breath or palpitations. And so, you know, what I tell my patients is, you know, when you have these symptoms, the sort of the current normal behavior is to take medication to treat the symptoms. So if you have a headache, you take, you know, ibuprofen or acetaminophen. If you have a stomach ache, you take something. If you have, you know, we tend to medicate our symptoms. And what we really need to do is to stop and say, huh, I think my mind is trying to tell me something. Like if I'm not sleeping well, I can either pop a couple Benadryl or I can stop and think, huh, why am I not sleeping well? What's going on in my life? What do I need to do to be healthier?
Right. Sure. So, all right. So the next question is from gray-haired mom, and it's a bit of a long question. I'll just read it out. So she says, work-related stress during pregnancy was my biggest challenge, something that you talked about, travel during treatment, Dr. Domer. So she says, so much so that she had to seek professional help from a psychologist for the first time in her life to deal with it. And she says, my OBGYN told me that stress during pregnancy was not recognized as a legitimate reason to request a medical leave from work. And as she said, women give birth to healthy babies in war zones. Stress isn't a threat to your baby's health. So she says, I've read recently, though, that research is pointing to significant developmental problems in children when mothers are exposed to experience stress during pregnancy. How worried or watchful should I be, she asks. And her son is 7 and seems completely unaffected.
Well, if her son seems great, I would be, you know, happy as a clam if I were her. You know, the fact is it's controversial about whether or not, you know, stress during pregnancy can lead to issues in the baby or children afterwards. You know, as I said earlier, feeling stressed is really unpleasant. So even if a study came out in 5 years showing that stress doesn't have an impact on kids, which I doubt that would happen, but if it did, it's still unpleasant to feel stressed. And, you know, pregnancy in and of itself is stressful. It requires enormous adaptations, you know, physically, psychologically, financially, relationship-wise. And it's a very, very good time to learn mind-body strategies. I actually published a book, I think, a year and a half ago on mind-body strategies during pregnancy because I have so many patients who are pregnant and who are really stressed out.
All right. Well, thank you for your answer, Dr. Omar. The next question comes from Emily, and Emily has a couple of questions. The first question she asks, can you talk about how infertility can impact women's partner or husband, and what can couples do together to reduce their stress from infertility and stay connected and not divided while struggling with infertility?
It's a great question, and I think that's probably why we did the app for men, because infertility, as I said at the beginning, you know, can have a huge impact on the couple. And, you know, I do a lot of couples counseling, and what you hear from them over and over again is, you know, I'm reacting this way, and my partner's reacting in a different way. He or she is wrong. And, you know, I think with infertility, women tend to express a lot more distress than men do, and they thus make the assumption that their male partner is not distressed. And I don't think that's a fair assumption. I think that, you know, men, by definition, don't tend to express distress the same way women do. You know, there's a lot of social pressure that men shouldn't get depressed. And when I talk to men without their wives around, they'll say, I'm just as upset as she is, but one of us needs to keep it together. You know, if I react like she does, we're going to fall apart. And so they feel like they have to be the rock. They have to be the solid person. And they suffer in private. So on one of the later sessions of the Mind-Body program, we have the men come and they go to a separate place with a therapist who asks the men how they're doing. And these mm-hmm. men pour out their hearts and souls.
Right.
Because no one has right. ever asked them. And, you know, Resolve, which is a national infertility organization in the U.S., did a survey of men of partners, you know, men experiencing infertility, either themselves or in the partnership, and mm-hmm. basically asked them, how distressed are you? And it was, like, unbelievable how distressed these men were. It's really hard
right,
for them.
Right,
because they
right.
want a child,
right, yeah.
They want a child, and they're seeing their wives be extremely upset. And mm-hmm. it's a real problem for them. And so, you know, I think that it's amazing. It's whatever, you know, she's doing. She's thinking about her partner. She's thinking about his feelings, which is mm-hmm. first. I think the first thing I tell couples is the way you're reacting is the right way for you. And the way mm-hmm. your partner is reacting is the right way for him or her. Don't try mm-hmm. to change the way they're coping. It's the right way for him or her. It does not mean, you know, you're right, they're wrong. Just leave them be and respect the way they're handling this.
Right, right. Absolutely. Okay, the next question from Emily is that she explains, my work didn't know that I was going through infertility treatments, like it's the case with every woman, I guess. And it was hard on me to have to juggle with being at the doctor 3 days a week, having to do suppositories while at the office and having to wear loose clothes, causing bruising on my stomach from the injections. Hurt so much all while having to still do an awesome job at work. So many of us don't want to tell our bosses that we are going through and should not have to, yet the hormones and stress deeply impact us at all aspects of our life. So what can others do, she asks.
It's a really good question. I think I get asked this about once a week, you know, how do I handle work?
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact
right.
is, you know, if you have a presentation tomorrow at 2:00 and the clinic calls and says your IUI is at 1:30, it can cause
mm-hmm.
a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can very much understand why people don't want to share this with their boss or supervisor. It's private. They don't want to be discriminated against. You know, whose business is it? On the other hand, you also don't want your boss supervisor to think you're goofing off or taking advantage or whatever. And so I think you have to sort of assess your position within your job and also think about your boss. If your boss is a 41-year-old woman with triplets, my guess
mm-hmm.
is she might understand what you're going through. If your boss is a 65-year-old man with, you know, 18 grandchildren, you know, not so much. So I think you need to
Absolutely.
Sort of survey your work situation and be self-protective. I mean, this infertility doesn't last
mm-hmm.
forever. It's a temporary crisis. And you need to, you know, figure out how can you be most self-protective.
Correct, correct. All right, one last question. The person says, I saw unsuccessful cycle program on your website, and I went through several failed IVFs and embryo transfers, and I'm financially and more so emotionally drained. I'm terrified to go for another one. I don't want to stop trying, but I'm terrified. How can this program help?
The unsuccessful cycle, it's not a program. It's a free half hour with a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what we do is we sort of talk about what your experience has been, how
mm-hmm.
you coped with your previous cycles, what worked for you and what didn't work for you, and then we'll provide
mm-hmm.
you with some coping skills acquisition to use if you decide to do another treatment cycle.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your answers, Dr. Romer, and thank you so much for finding out time from your busy schedule. I guess we are at almost over the scheduled time that we had. And thank you for sharing some great advice on how people can deal with the much inevitable stress that comes with the infertility and its treatments. And I'm sure this talk would be helpful to many people who are on their journey to parenthood and also help them deal with various other kinds of stress in their life. And people who want to learn more about the apps that Dr. Domer mentioned can go on fertycalm.com and fertystrong.com websites to know more. Claire, Graymom, Emily, and Sally, thank you for your great questions. And audience, I thank you for your support, and we look forward to having you all join us for our next Cure Talk on multiple myeloma on 10th May at 6 p.m. Eastern. And for more information on this show and other upcoming shows, please visit www.curetalks.com. And I would love to hear your feedbacks and about this Cure Talks on fertility issues. And I would welcome your suggestions on topics that you would that you feel that should be covered in the Cure Talks. Please email me your suggestions on shweta@trialx.com. And the link for today's show will be sent via email to all the participants. So until next time, thank you, everyone, and goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks, Dr. Omar.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.